I've decided that I want to read something, and I'm not sure if you'll find it enjoyable or comforting or sleep-inducing, but that is what I've decided that I want to do. And normally, I would go straight to my bookshelf and pick out my favorite book and flip it open and look for a portion that I have underlined or put a little note in the margin. And I'd read that bit because clearly I liked it enough, or it made me think enough to put pencil to paper. To claim it as mine, even though it's not mine at all. And, well, I couldn't do that. Not with my favorite book, at least, because I've destroyed my favorite book. I probably have more pencil, pen, highlighter in it than actual text. From all the times that I've read it and reread it and wrote down all of my thoughts. I don't keep a diary. I never really have. When I was younger, I would try to, because I thought that's what girls do. They keep a diary and then their brothers find it, and at least that's what sitcoms told me. So I would try to write and I couldn't because it felt so wrong. It felt so not real to sit and talk about your day, talk about your crush. So instead, I would read someone else's words, and it was like magic. It was Well, you know what it was. You have read before. And that would stir up so much in me that I wouldn't even think about it. I would just feel. And I'd write it down in that book. Because I didn't have anyone to tell it to, so figured if the books knew exactly what I was feeling, what I was thinking, and they didn't even know me, well then I can share that with the book. So, this is a roundabout way of saying you're not getting Jane Eyre right now. Instead, you are getting Elliot Perlman, and I believe, is this a novel or is this many short stories? It's a novel. Seven Types of Ambiguity. So, Chapter 1. He nearly called you again last night. Can you imagine that? After all this time? He can. He imagines calling you or running into you by chance. Depending on the weather, he imagines you in one of those cotton dresses of yours with flowers on it, or in faded blue jeans and a thick woolen button-up cardigan over a checked shirt, drinking coffee from a mug, looking through your tortoiseshell glasses at a book of poetry while it rains. He thinks of you with your hair tied back and that characteristic sweet scent on your neck. He imagines you this way when he's on the train, in the supermarket, at his parents' house, at night, alone, and when he is with a woman. He's wrong, though. You don't read poetry at all. He had wanted you to read poetry, but you didn't. If pressed, he confesses to an imprecise recollection of what it was you read, and anyway, it wasn't your reading that started this. It was the laughter. The carefree laughter, the three-dimensional Coca-Cola advertisement that you were, the try-anything-once friends, the imperviousness to all that came before you, the chain telephone calls, the in-jokes, the instant music, the sunlight that you carried with you, the way he felt when you spoke to his parents, the introductory undergraduate courses, the inevitability of your success, the beach houses, the white lace underwear, the private dancing, the good-graced acceptance of part-time shift work, the apparent absence of expectations, the ever-changing disposable cults of the rural, the family, the eastern, the classical, the modern, postmodern, the impoverished, the sleekly deregulated, the orgasm, the feminine, the feminist. And then, the way you canceled with the air of one making a salad. You would love the way he sees you. He uses you as a weapon against himself, and not merely because you did. He sits in his car at traffic lights on his way out sometimes and tries to estimate how many times he has sat here. Waiting at these traffic lights on his way somewhere without you, hoping to meet someone with the capacity to consign you to an anecdote to be eventually confused with others. He thinks of you when the woman lying next to him thinks he's asleep. It would not surprise you that there are many women. Do you remember you thought him beautiful? You never told him. He had to assume it. He was beautiful and is now, some 9 years later, even more so. The years have refined him so that once boyish good looks have evolved into a clean, smooth charm. Not always, though. First thing in the morning or after he's been drinking, the charm disappears. The drinking is not really the problem at the moment, though. Not right now. Of late, it has been no more of a problem with him than it is with your husband. Which is to say, of late, the quantity itself is no cause for alarm. But there is a secret need in both men to have their inhibitors inhibited. In Simon's case, this is merely the tip of an older and more fundamental iceberg.